I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I am your host, Mike Madison, here 9 to 11 o'clock weekdays. It's Wednesday today. Next hour, we will do what we do every Wednesday, which is Hump Day Health, natural health news you can use. We're going to look at something, you know, sometimes I stumble on things personally. And I began to examine when I was eating, not just what I was eating, but when I was eating. And it turns out that there may be some difference to your health, depending on not only what you eat, but when you eat. We'll talk about that. And also ran across a story. I've seen it several times over the past several years, but it appears that more young men, ages, I believe it's somewhere in the 24 to 44 year old age range, more young men are now taking Viagra regularly. This should not be happening. And so we'll take a look at that. So the show's going to get sexy today. Hump Day Health next hour, so we'll get to those things. You know, it was interesting to me. I'm just going to make a point real quick, and then I'll get into my show. The Island of Mike Madison Show is what I believe I'll start calling this show. As I find myself, well, actually, I found a fellow traveler. I'm going to read from a piece written by Gary Barnett that really, really struck me about 30 minutes ago. Realized maybe I'm not as alone as I thought I was. There's two of us, not just me. Speaking on the health side, yesterday I had Steve Merritt on with Southern Sky Brands. Southern Sky Brands is the new medical marijuana grow operation up in Canton. And I wanted to bring something up. We didn't really touch on it in the show, but it kind of hit me. It was interesting to hear him talk about one of his competitors, and one of his competitors that I've had on air here, Kelly Williams. She and her partner Chad have got Kelly's Green, and they are doing exactly the same thing that Steve Merritt is doing with Southern Sky Brands. What was interesting is that Steve said, yeah, I like Kelly. She's a great girl. They got a good operation there, too. And I mentioned this because it's just kind of interesting. I am known on this show to be against the war on drugs and tell you that prohibition not only doesn't work, but it's also very damaging to society at large. It creates gang violence, all these other things. Isn't it interesting, though, for a couple of people who are going to be growing marijuana to just say, oh, yeah, I know that guy, a good guy. See, this is what legalized drugs do. People cooperate and they compete, like Coke and Pepsi, like Jack Daniels and Jim Beam. They don't try to kill each other. Steve didn't say, when I mentioned Kelly and Kelly's Green, one of his competitors, he didn't say, yeah, I'm going to smoke that sucker. He just intends to simply compete with them. Both of them will try to provide good quality products that help patients who need access to this, that some of these medicines are good for. They'll build their reputations on these products. They'll compete. Some will succeed. Some will fail. Some will buy each other out. If they have a competitive conflict, if they have some kind of something goes sideways between these two organizations that will be growing and selling marijuana, they'll take it to court. They won't settle it in the streets. They won't be shooting each other. They won't be recruiting underage kids to go out and carry out the hit because they get less time as a minor. No, none of those things. They will compete. They'll probably attend the same trade shows. They'll get to know each other. They may trade tips and commiserate on the industry. And then if something arises, they'll take it to court in an orderly fashion. See, in the black market, you only compete using violence. Because there's no redress in the courts. Disputes are solved and resolved violently on the streets. And then we come out here and complain about gang violence. So you've seen Live Time yesterday a couple of people who will be growing this prohibited product. They will be using it for God's work and helping patients in the state of Mississippi. But these are two marijuana growers who are just going to compete the same way that Coors and Bud Light compete, the same way Jim Beam and Jack Daniels compete, the way that Napa Valley competes with wine regions in France. All of these things, mind-bending, psychic-altering plants that are just processed using different things. But this is what legalized drugs does. Creates a civilized society. In the case of medical marijuana, giving people what they need. Jim Beam, Jack Daniels, giving people just what they want. But you don't have to suffer all the side effects of the ridiculous war on drugs. Just wanted to point that out, make sure that that point wasn't missed. Before I get into my show today, I'll get to my quotes of the day. First one is, and I will preface the entire show or the entire first hour with this one from Plato. No one is more hated than he who speaks the truth. So keep that in mind as you listen to some of the things I break down today. I would imagine this will be another show that maybe stokes a little disfavor with people. No one is more hated than he who speaks the truth. I will say I've never laid any claim to say I know the truth on everything. It's quite absolutely not true. I'm learning new things and questioning my assumptions all the time. I don't have a monopoly on the truth, but I am fairly well researched, and I got to tell you, my gut instincts aren't half bad. And then Ben Carson, the quote of the day, Ben Carson says, "We, the American people, are not each other's enemies." This is Ben Carson. He's a Republican, a cardiologist, a very calm influence, a Republican candidate for president, held in pretty high esteem by conservatives and Republicans. Ben Carson says, "We, the American people, are not each other's enemies. The enemies are those people behind the curtain jerking everybody's chains and trying to divide us up by age, by race, and by income." Amen, Ben Carson. He should throw in there also a political party or your view on your favorite political savior. They divide us among these things as well. Yesterday, I tell you what, I'm going to take a break. I'm going to come back. I want to get to this Gary Barnett piece. I believe I was fairly alone on an island yesterday. I had some one-on-one conversations with people. I didn't get a whole lot of pushback, but I know I got some emails and some messages here at the station. You disagree. I was not as fired up about the Trump Mar-a-Lago raid. I see people now that are they believe a civil war must take place now. They have raided the Palm Beach mansion estate of the New York City billionaire that I believe loves me. So it's time to take to the streets and sacrifice ourselves. Yeah, it didn't hit me that way. Luckily, I'm getting a few reinforcements here. When I come back, I'm going to read from this piece for Gary Barnett. Trigger alert. I'm going to go ahead and issue a preemptive trigger alert right now. Be right back. I talk a lot about the fact that I am an observer of what goes on because I don't have dogs in a lot of these hunts. I'm not on one side or the other. I'm on the side of the American people. I'd like to see our country continue on as a free place. But I don't have political saviors. I don't have faith in political parties. So I'm kind of an observer, and this is really for my own mental health because what I try to do is I try to look, and we're going to look at some of the reactions to the raid on Trump's Mar-a-Lago Palm Beach mansion. and I try to look at these, like somebody who studies ants. You know, you don't really get emotionally involved if you're a researcher and you're trying to figure out the behavior pattern of ants. You should choose to find it fascinating, even if some things in the ant world seem strange or weird or unfair. You're just really, you're trying to learn about the ants. That's really what I'm trying to do for my own mental health. I fade a lot of heat from some of these things. People are angry with me for my observations sometimes, but I'm about to do one for me, too. So we're going to read this Gary Barnett article where it scratched me where I itched. I'll put it that way. So this one's for me. Trigger warning to a lot of people out there. I'm interested in the reaction to the raid on Mar-a-Lago. There were a couple of things that I found interesting. Here is one. This was a tweet sent out by Mike Pompeo. Mike Pompeo, Trump's Secretary of State and CIA director. He took the CIA director and put him in charge of the State Department and called it a war against the deep state. I still haven't quite figured that one out, but I'm sure someone could explain it to me. Anyway, this is what Mike Pompeo tweeted out. Executing a warrant against ex-POTUS is dangerous. The apparent political weaponization of the DOJ FBI is shameful. AG must explain why 250 years of practice was upended with this raid. I served on the Benghazi committee where we proved Hillary possessed classified info. We didn't raid her home. Now, I don't know how that hits everybody else. I'll tell you how it hit me. This is inside the mind of Mike Madison. I was like, oh, yeah, of course, because Mike Pompeo, see, it's just us little people that should be subjected to raids, arrests, censorship, imprisonment, persecution, forced plea deals, IRS abuses, SWAT raids, forced masking, forced vaccinations to keep our jobs. That's just for the little people. Mike Pompeo is pointing out, you're breaking precedent. We knew Hillary Clinton was guilty of something like this, but we didn't suffer her the indignity of a raid or an arrest or a prosecution or a persecution or really much of anything. Don't you know that when Mike Pompeo is trying to explain, don't you know when you reach a certain level in our society, the laws do not apply to you anymore? We've known this for 250 years. And as it seems, Mike Pompeo is perfectly fine with that. He decided that Hillary Clinton was above the law. So while they proved she committed a crime, they took no action. And that's the status quo that Mike Pompeo is absolutely happy with. Well, this does not mean that I stand in support of the raid on Trump. I'm just pointing out Mike Pompeo is saying, hey, look, our tradition is once you get to a certain level, you don't suffer these indignities. How dare you break that precedent? Raids are just for the little people. Here was a very interesting one to me. This is he's referred to as the Great One. I try to spare us any Sean Hannity clips, but of course, the great one, Mark Levin, my inspiration for getting into radio, because I thought if he can do it with that voice, I can do it too. Mark Levin, bloodthirsty for war with Russia, too. People are starting to kind of point that out, but he says nice things about Trump, so we'll excuse his neocon warmongering ways. But he said this on the Sean Hannity show, I just thought was interesting.
So let's be clear. Newt is right. They're all right. This is the worst attack on this republic in modern history, period. And it's not just an attack on Donald Trump. It's an attack on everybody who supports him. It's an attack on anybody who dares to raise serious questions about Washington, D.C. and the establishment in both parties.
Now, I want to get back to the kind of the money line there. Let's maybe back up because I really almost let it go too long because there was the one thing I really wanted to point out and make sure that I was bringing up here. Let's see if I can get to the right segment here. Twitter's going to act up on me here. Anyway, Mark Levin says, this is the greatest attack on our republic in modern times, period. To which I would think John F. Kennedy would be looking down on us and going, hey, wait, what? I don't know if anybody noticed, but they blew my brains out across a convertible in the middle of the afternoon on a major thoroughfare downtown in front of a crowd and the world to remove me from the presidency. I mean, I'm just saying, maybe it's not right that they raided Trump's Mar-a-Lago on some misdemeanor charge. That does seem a little political theatery, but can we get a little perspective here, Mark Levin? They assassinated a sitting president in broad daylight in front of the world one day. But this raid, that's the biggest attack on a republic. It's my opinion that in 1963 we had a full-on coup, and really if you look at history and the trajectory of this country, particularly when it comes to foreign policy and domestic policies, JFK was the last real president. he actually started to deliver on some of the things he talked about. You go back and listen to some of JFK's speeches. They're more cryptic. They're more eloquent than the Trump speech. But I mean, you want to talk about somebody who was at war with the deep state. That was John F. Kennedy. They blew his brains out. I'm just saying. JFK may be looking down on us now and saying, what's a brother got to do to get a little respect when it comes to an attack on the Republic? Yesterday, I felt pretty alone in my island. I'm going to read a piece of this Gary Barnett. This one's just, it's kind of for me. I'll be honest with you. Gary Barnett, and just to put into some context who this guy is, he's got GaryDBarnett.com. He's done a lot of good work on the clot shots, on the COVID scam. This is really how I got to be familiar with his material. Lou Rockwell, LouRockwell.com, features him as a columnist from time to time. But he's done some very good work on COVID. I would imagine a lot of people would look at a lot of Gary Barnett pieces and be very, very enthusiastically support his work. Not sure about this one, but I know where he's coming from. This is what Gary Barnett wrote, and boy, maybe he says it better than I do. Gary Barnett says, we have just been through over 2.5 years of total tyranny leading to complete totalitarianism. The country's slave class voluntarily accepted home prison called lockdowns. They accepted the forced loss of their jobs. They accepted the loss of most of their freedom. They accepted state-staged riots, property destruction, and brutal violence all allowed by the state. They accepted a loss of most all mobility to travel. They accepted wearing deadly masks by order, and they accepted experimental poisonous bioweapon injections by the hundreds of millions. They lived with purposefully manufactured food shortages. They lived with loss of income at the hands of the hypocritical monsters in political office. They abandoned their families and friends. They lost all decent medical care, what little there was. They lived with mass state murder that is democide. They reported their neighbors and shunned all who did not comply with state mandate idiocy, and they crawled under rocks pretending that nothing was amiss. They watched as trillions of fake dollars were printed, theft of property stolen, and fed to the banking and corporate masters. They watched as a staged war in Ukraine became the fodder for stupidity worldwide. They watched as prices doubled, tripled, and in some cases went up 100-fold almost overnight. And they watched as the state threatened and is now implementing the poisoning and killing of children by lethal injection with fake vaccines. So he kind of gives this context of what we've been putting up with the last couple of years. He says, as of this morning, after everything I have mentioned above and much more, stupidity and blind gullibility continues to consume this population of scared and naive simpletons. After all that has happened, nearly 100% of what is being presented by most all of the mainstream and alternative media today is the so-called raid on Trump's mansion. Forgotten is the reality that all liberty has been destroyed, the economy is nearly ruined, slavery of the masses is rampant, threats to turn loose the armed IRS on every citizen not protected by government is being implemented, and more fake viruses are being planned. But all that is important today is the Trump raid, which by all laws of logic is probably a setup, a scam, or a false flag being used for any number of reasons. Even if this was a legitimate story, it is irrelevant concerning the big picture. All are consumed by this nonsense and by design. Yeah, this is the political theater. This is a big play here. This was a big production full of FBI, Gestapo. It serves just all of the great purposes of great theater, which is the very clear. And what's beautiful about this one is that you get to pick who the villain is in this one. In some cases, it is the deep state, Joe Biden, FBI, gang of thugs. Or, and to the left, the villain is Donald Trump, who is being taken down right now, finally held accountable for whatever crimes you believe he may have committed. This was perfectly timed, perfectly fed political theater. This will actually be one of these things that will benefit Donald Trump. Strange how that works. I'm sure they never could have calculated that. This is a staged event. This is political theater, and it is by design. And when Ben Carson says the American people are not each other's enemies, it is the people behind the scenes jerking us around. This is one of those jerking around exercises. And I know this has got a lot of people very fired up, ready to go to civil war, ready to fire on your neighbor. if they supported this thing. I'm no fan of what happened. And I told you my laundry list is long of the abuses of some of these government agencies. I am much more concerned. I believe if I had to rank everything, the imprisonment of a journalist, Julian Assange, who was actually exposing deep state secrets, is more important to me. The exiling of Edward Snowden, who actually told you, hey, deep state spying on every single one of you. They're reading your emails. They're logging your voicemails. They're doing all this stuff. He was exiled from this country, currently in the, I guess, in the freer country of Russia, where he's had to seek refuge. There's that January 6th protesters who have, some of them, been in jail for over a year now, some in solitary confinement, the treatment being obviously quite brutal. And this is not to mention the hundreds of thousands of Americans that have been targeted by this same system, average Joes and Janes, that have been suffering these kinds of things. So the fact that a Palm Beach billionaire's house was raided when he wasn't even home, and this grand political theater thing is just, it just doesn't really move the needle for me. It's moving the needle for some people to a civil war because their billionaires has been targeted. If you don't notice, this is actually great for Trump. He will fundraise off of this. The Republicans are rallying around him. This is working out just great. I got to tell you, if I were Donald Trump, I would have hired a bunch of FBI guys to have raided me a long time ago. I'll be right back. What's the frequency, Ken? All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. You can reach me by email if you want to get me after hours. You're not happy with me. You can call during break. Sometimes I don't take calls during the show if I want to get through some material. I've explained this. I'm not really a caller-driven show, for better or worse. You can always email me, MikeMadison@WYAB.com. I'm not playing. I'm not playing in this political theater. Of the Trump raid, and I got to tell you, people who are all incensed about this, it's, as I say, as an observer, it's interesting. People are pointing out the connections between the judge who signed the search warrant and his connection to Epstein. Now, this is very creepy stuff. We know that this Epstein, the tentacles of this are far and wide. We don't know how far or how wide, because we never got to the bottom of it. And so this is just kind of your rank-and-file, nasty, political class, two-tiered system of justice that we have in this country. There's certainly no denying that. This is, I've railed about it for 5 years, so there's nothing surprising me there. It is disgusting. It is corruption. It's all gross stuff. But I'm just wondering, again, I'm an observer. I have to always just ask questions in my quest to figure out, to understand how people think. Were you equally suspicious when Donald Trump named the prosecutor who gave Epstein a sweetheart slap on the wrist deal in 2005, when Trump named him as our labor secretary? That was Alexander Acosta. He was the prosecutor that sentenced Jeffrey Epstein to, I believe, 13 months in, you know, minimum security work release, essentially, for decades of abusing underage girls. Was that at all? Didn't that seem a little wonky to people? I mean, I talked about it a great deal as it was happening. How in the hell does this guy, and understand that the Epstein issue just got kicked off because of the Miami Herald? Now, thank God we had Donald Trump in office for 4 years. He got to the bottom of that Epstein thing, right? No, well, that's right, he didn't. Jeffrey Epstein, air quote here in the studios, killed himself while Trump was in office. We've never seen the black book. We have no earthly idea. And the media still is covering for the fact that all of these girls were just groomed for the exclusive use of Jeffrey Epstein. Donald Trump actually probably knows a lot of the people by name. He was in these social circles. I do not believe Trump availed himself of any of these services. There's no proof of that, no indication of that. But he was friends with the Clintons and with this cabal of rich and powerful people, the exact kinds of people who were abusing these young girls. And strangely, during the 4 years of the Trump administration, we never really untangled that mess, did we? Huh. That's kind of weird. Was it too soon?
There's one other thing I'm going to say while I'm in this. I do podcast the show. You can go find it at the Mike Madison Show. It's on different podcast things. Sometimes I can read the room in my podcast numbers, and I'll be very interested to see the next few days. Sometimes when I tackle some of this stuff that really goes against the mainstream conservative narrative, which was this is the greatest attack on our republic in the history of the world. It's time to take up arms to defend our billionaire. When I go against things like that, I'll see a bit of a dive in my podcast numbers. I'll have to circle around to try to win everybody back. We'll talk about the shots in a couple of days. This thing is still going haywire, and I can pretty much get people back on my side there. But there is there's a meme out there. It's actually a very powerful, very well-done meme, and I'm not sure if this came out of the Trump campaign itself, but it was pretty genius. And I'm sure most everybody has seen it. It is the black and white picture of Donald Trump. And it says, he's got a very stern look on his face, a very powerful look on his face. And it says, they aren't coming after me. They're coming after you. I'm just in the way. Now, I got to tell you, when it comes to political messaging, this is one of the best images I've ever seen. My absolute compliments and kudos to whoever came up with this, put the words to that particular very strong image of Donald Trump. I just find myself kind of scratching my head saying, this seems to say that Donald Trump was our great protector. And then I look over recent history, even during the Trump administration, and I scratch my head and say, wow, if he's standing in the way, he needs a few more people to stand on the flanks because they've been getting past him. Am I wrong? But during the Trump administration, were people not abused by the IRS? I mean, they got around him to you, didn't they? Most people pay, productive members of our society pay about half of the money that they earn in all kinds of different taxes once they're all added up. Little guys out there were being abused by the Justice Department for breaking some rule or regulation. They make an example of you. They bring the heavy hand of the state. This happened during the Trump administration. But then it got worse even towards the end. We actually saw it didn't even matter if you were a Trump supporter or not. It didn't matter really what your political leaning was. You were barred from going to your job. You were forced to wear a mask. Many people had to take a shot that they didn't want, an experimental gene therapy, just to be able to feed their family. And I'm just saying, if this image is to be believed, this idea that they're coming after you, he just stands in the way. Well, I got to tell you, they're getting around him. I didn't really sense a whole lot of protection from this one guy. Now, the political theater is obviously you're pro-Trump, you're anti-Trump, they're going after Trump, they're scared of him in 2024, all of the other things that they say. But when it comes to the idea that this man somehow stands between the evildoers in the state and us, I'm not seeing it. I just watched 2 years. 2 years of people that were not able to have a funeral for their loved ones. They were not able to go to the hospital and spend time with their dying mother. Couples that had been married for 80 years couldn't be by each other's side as one of them passed away. You weren't able to have your job if you weren't deemed essential. Business owners in mainstream just crushed with COVID regulations. Across the board, not just in the blue states, it happened here too. They broke everything. So the idea, while the political imagery of this thing, they're not coming after me, they're coming after you, I'm just standing in the way, the imagery is absolutely beautiful and powerful and probably resonates with a whole lot of people. But I don't know if you've noticed. They're getting around him, if that's the case. I'll be right back. How hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. We're the Renegades, and it's Atomic Age. All right, next hour we're going to move on Hump Day Health. You can call anytime this week if you want to and tell me why I'm so wrong on this. Look, I see this Trump raid as being some just really excellent political theater. If I was a better talk show host, a better researcher, a better reporter, and I think I can affect this. I need to sign up for all Republican Party, Trump, Biden, Democrat Party fundraising text, because it's always interesting to see what they fundraise off of. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if Donald Trump is not doing some fundraising off of this little incursion, this raid on his compound. I'm just saying, I would imagine that, and it's not, I'm not saying he did it. I'm just saying it's probably going to work out pretty great for him. There is no way to snap your followers back in line more quickly than some kind of an attack by this entity, the deep state, that you've been telling people that you're opposing. Pay no attention to the fact that you hired them in your first term. But I would imagine it's great. I'm going to finish up this this Gary Barnett piece. And I say, I am, admittedly, I'm doing this one for me because it's lonely on this island. I like it. There's plenty of space. I get plenty of time by myself to sit with my thoughts and enjoy the beautiful scenery. But, you know, it gets a tad lonely being out on an intellectual island. So I'm happy to have somebody there also speaking. This is what Gary Barnett finishes his piece with about this, where he sees this, as I do, as just a genius piece of political theater for both sides. Gary Barnett says, my approach to life, and especially air quotes news, unquote, is to believe nothing, trust nothing, and question everything. This weird set of events lately solidly confirms my position, and in the best interest of intelligence and sanity, I will take this air quotes news event with a grain of salt and not spend any of my energy buying into or considering another state narrative filled with holes. Of course, I never do. I consider this only as fraud and deceit and most likely a scam that could have been initiated by either side or both. Think before you jump, as in most every case, the cliff of nefarious lies is much higher than expected and gullibility leads only to madness. And you want to talk about madness? The calls for civil war now because they've raided the compound of a billionaire. And it could be, you know, I'm a little ornery. I've told you I've got a pinched nerve in my back, kind of in my hip. It's maybe making me a little ornery. I've got a low tolerance for this stuff right now. And I've spent the last day kind of looking at the reactions. Mark Levin saying the greatest attack on our republic in modern history. I got to tell you, I look across the spectrum of things that have taken place over the past. What is modern history? 70 years, 100 years. I look at the creation of the Federal Reserve that has usurped all kinds of power. That Steve Bannon's finally on that track, so maybe that'll finally catch some resonance. I look at the assassination of John F. Kennedy. I look at the staged, fabricated event of the Gulf of Tonkin that drug us into Vietnam and killed 58,000 of our sons and brothers. During Vietnam, Nixon went and scuttled peace talks for political advantage, ended up killing tens of thousands of more troops than needed to, plus if we want to consider it, the millions of Southeast Asians that died during that time. And look at the weapons of mass destruction lie that was put out there, and look at the false flag that was 9/11. I don't know exactly what took place on 9/11, but I can tell you what didn't take place. The fact that the Patriot Act arose after that, and we gave away a ton of our freedoms in this ridiculous war on terror. So I got to tell you, Mark Levin, and that is not an inclusive list, not an exhaustive list. I could probably go through and find you about 50 things, certainly more egregious as threats to our republic than a raid on a former ex-president. And understand, too, I do have a different bar for this kind of things. I don't support this, right? I know it's political theater. I know that's what it is. It's designed to do exactly what has happened, which is get everybody into their foxholes ready to fight for their side. And you're not going to lash out at the government. That's too big of a risk and everything else. So you're just going to scream at each other. You're going to alienate friends and relatives. This is going to be one of these very divisive topics that gets you to just not communicate with anybody from the other side. It works perfectly every time. And the funny thing is, so many people understand this divide and conquer in theory. They just can't see it when it's happening. They refuse. Well, yeah, it's normally divide and conquer, but this is the real thing. And so these things just continue to perpetuate themselves. But I want people to understand kind of where I come from. Again, I do not support this FBI raid on Mar-a-Lago because I know it is what it is. It's there's corruption involved when there's political theater, there's gamesmanship. It's just a big game to these people. Unfortunately, where it's not a game is when these kinds of things are used against the American people, where the IRS is used against American people, where FBI is used against the American people, where all these things are actually against us who are helpless. We don't have billions of dollars to hire attorneys and do press conferences. We just suffer in silence. We're ground into dust behind the scenes. Nobody even knows it's happening. But when it comes to me, when it comes to raiding and harassing ex-presidents, I'm for harassing every single one of them because I believe they're all blood-soaked war criminals. I would be absolutely happy and thrilled to know that there was some accountability to George W. Bush for the multitude of crimes, and particularly war crimes, that he committed during his term. I would love to see Barack Obama swept out of his comfy Hamptons estate right there on the water. Very risky with climate change, as many people have pointed out. But he's gotten his seaside resort mansion. I'd like to see him swept out of there for the war crimes committed against the people of Syria and Libya and Iraq and Afghanistan and everywhere else that, let's not forget Ukraine. Let's not forget Ukraine, where Barack Obama's State Department actively overthrew the government there and unleashed Nazis onto 14,000 ethnic Russians that were murdered as part of Barack Obama's foreign policy. I got you with me on that one, didn't I? But here we go. I can't help myself. Donald Trump, who committed the war crime of going in and seizing oil fields in Syria to deny them the rightful access to their own natural resources to rebuild their country that the West, and led by the United States, actually destroyed, setting off waves and waves of people fleeing for their lives into Europe that wrecked Europe as well. We decided we'd get out of Syria, but we're keeping the oil. He bragged about that. I also believe that when it's all said and done, many people within the Trump administration, and you can decide for yourself if Trump has any culpability of this. I know people like to make excuses, but what I believe to be one of the greatest crimes against humanity in the history of the world, which is this experimental gene therapy shot that has already killed and maimed millions of people around the world, should be investigated, and people should be tried for that too. Anthony Fauci certainly being number one. You can decide Trump's own culpability. I know a lot of people like to think, well, it wasn't his fault. Yeah, he's still bragging about it, still telling people to get shots. He's still telling you it was the greatest accomplishment in the history of the world. He's still telling you that he saved 10 million people, but he's really not behind Operation Warp Speed. I mean, he takes credit for it, but he's not really behind it. I, as an observer, this is some of that behavior that I find curious. I'm taking notes. I'm trying to figure it out, much like looking at the ants and not understanding their culture. I look at these things and go, well, I got to give him a pass on that, right? I want him returned to the we're horribly opposed to this experiment on all of humankind. We have got toddlers right now being taken in by parents who were fear-mongered into believing their child's at risk. We are going to experiment on toddlers in this country with these untested and worthless vaccines. But I want to return the guy who was actually bragged about going to the FDA and cutting all the red tape and making sure they didn't have to test him. I want that guy going back into the White House. This is one of those behaviors I'm observing that I'm just really trying to figure out. Eventually I'll get there. I'll take enough notes. I'll consider, you know what I mean? I'm trying to figure out how exactly that works. And certainly Joe Biden, who has kicked off this horrific war in Ukraine. No, it was Vladimir Putin's fault for invading. I do not support the invasion. But in any day, any afternoon from before that war started and up to and including this afternoon, this thing could be solved by just acknowledging a couple of independent regions of ethnic Russians in Ukraine. Hands off these people. Ukraine Nazis, quit attacking and killing these people. You already killed 14,000 of them. You're just going to sign a piece of paper saying, hey, we're going to quit killing your folks. And this war could be over. Joe Biden is a blood-soaked criminal through many wars. He's got a career of, 40 years in politics. He is one of the biggest war criminals in in the presidency in quite some time, because he has not only committed war crimes as president of the United States, but he also facilitated and signed off on war crimes as a senator for decades. So just to kind of understand where my bar is and maybe why my excitement level about somebody raiding an ex-president's compound is not really that important to me, because I think they all should be raided just on different things. This raid for a misdemeanor is political theater. But if there was any actual justice out there, basically every president in modern times should have been rousted from their beds at 6 a.m. and hauled in front of the Hague for war crimes and crimes against humanity. So that separates me a little bit from most conservative talk show hosts, just so you know where I'm coming from. You know, maybe it's me. I definitely could be the one that is absolutely wrong, and all of the ants that I'm observing actually make perfect sense. I'm just saying my bar is a little bit different. When I come back, I'm going to get into a little bit more positive news, Hump Day Health, natural health news you can use. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, and it's Wednesday. Every Wednesday, we focus in on health and this little segment called Hump Day Health, Natural Health News You Can Use. I start every show by explaining to everybody, you've not heard me before, I'm not a doctor, not a scientist, not a biologist, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a nurse, I'm not a surgeon, I'm not a therapist, I'm not an immunologist, not a vaccinologist, I think that's a thing. I'm not a therapist. I'm nothing. I have no certification to advise you on your health. I'm an endlessly curious human being who was concerned about my children, so I started researching food back when my children were four. And I found what I thought were some disturbing things. And so I changed my diet. And I've seen profound health benefits to that. And I believe that more and more people should be and could be doing this as well. I'm just dropping breadcrumbs to try to get you to do it. We're going to talk a little bit today. There's an interesting article about it's not only what you eat, but when you eat that could be affecting your health. I wanted to get to that because I've been dealing with a little bit of a personal struggle stuff. And it's interesting to me, you know, if I'm having some issue, some health-related issue, and this was particularly attached to sleep, my inclination is not to go, oh, I got to schedule an appointment, get to a doctor and get a pill for this sleeping problem I've got. No, I immediately start to examine all of my habits, all of my food intake, all of the other things that may be disrupting my ability to sleep well. Sleep is very important. And I know after several nights of not sleeping well, this can have some bad effects on my life. So I immediately look to myself to research what could possibly be causing my sleep disruptions. And I found some interesting things, and I'll tell you about a little experiment I started yesterday that seems to already be bearing fruit. I also wanted to get to a story today that apparently young people, young guys, 24 to 45, something like that, I can't remember the age group, are really relying on Viagra these days. I'm telling you, this is not normal. It's not good, unless you're a Pfizer shareholder or a Pfizer CEO. It's working out great. But for those of us out there, so we're going to get a little sexy today. I guess if I can talk about irritable bowel syndrome, I can talk about erectile dysfunction on this show as well. But before I get into all that, there was a very interesting segment on the Bill Maher show. Now, Bill Maher, it's been kind of interesting to watch his awakening on some of the left stuff. He's a very intelligent guy, disagree with him vehemently on some issues, but he's no dummy. And he does go and tread where few will actually go and tread. So I've got a little bit of, it's a fairly long clip here, of something he did. He does a segment called New Rule, and he did this. And I believe this is true love, or what do we call it, tough love stuff. It can be viewed and will be viewed by some level of condescension or judgment, but it is reality, and we live in a world where I really try to bring some reality to health topics here on this show. And he really, I believe, kind of knocked it out of the park. And I'm going to add a little something here or there to what he said. But this was Bill Maher on what has become America's new fat acceptance.
A disturbing trend going on in America these days. Rewriting science. to fit ideology or just to fit what you want reality to be. We've gone from fat acceptance to fat celebration. That's new. That is new. To view letting yourself go as a point of pride? We used to at least try and be fit and healthy, and society praised those who succeeded. Now the term body positivity is used to mean I'm perfect the way I am because I'm me. It's Orwellian how often positivity is used to describe what's not healthy. Of course you can get away with anything bad for you when you're young, but let me ask you this. Have you ever seen a fat 90-year-old? Scary, isn't it? Healthy at any weight is an unchallenged lie that people tell themselves so they can go on eating whatever they want, which is fine. I've done many self-destructive things, too, but no one pretended there was positivity in smoking. Fat activist Ted Kyle, founder of Conscient Health, says the media and public needs to stop catastrophizing obesity. Okay, A, they're not catastrophizing it, and B, they should be. Because it's a full-blown catastrophe. Poor diet is the leading cause of mortality in the United States. New York Times. Okay. Of course, we're talking about heart disease and cancer and diabetes, but also, as COVID has taught us, obesity is horrible for the immune system, which is why those numbers were off the charts.
And he puts up a graphic here during COVID, and we've talked about it a lot here on the station and on this show. When it came to COVID, the fact that Thomas Dobbs never got around to this little nugget. He told you had to wear a mask. He told you had to keep your kids at home and isolated and alienated from all of their friends and education and life-marking events like the prom. He told you to do all those things. He never happened to mention that, hey, obesity is really killing a lot of people when it comes to this COVID stuff. Never got around to that. And so while this may feel judgy to some people or something, it could have saved a lot of lives if we'd pointed out how unhealthy obesity is. It's an epidemic in this country. The stats he's got on the screen from the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health, if you were obese during COVID, you were 113% more likely to be hospitalized, 74% more likely to be admitted to the ICU, and 48% more likely to die. Strange how Anthony Fauci, Thomas Dobbs, never got around to this juicy little nugget that might have saved what? By their own numbers, hundreds of thousands of lives, millions of lives around the planet by just challenging this idea. Hey, now's the time to get in shape. Make sure your vitamin D levels are high. It's time to drop those extra pounds. Instead, they locked you in your home and hid this information from you and told you, oh, you're fine like you are. Just wear the mask. And we see how that turned out.
During the pandemic, that's a catastrophe. It's literally a national security issue now. Military recruitment is down by the most since the end of the draft because mainly 17 to 24-year-olds are too fat to fight. At some point, acceptance becomes enabling. And if you're in any way participating in this joyful celebration of gluttony that goes on now, you have blood on your hands. Full stop. You can make believe you're fighting some great social justice battle for a besieged minority, but what you're really doing is enabling addicts, which I thought we decided was bad. It's not just the drawstring business suits. Companies like Nike, Sports Illustrated, Victoria's Secret, companies that are specifically about fitness, nevertheless promote people who are plainly not into fitness. People like Adele face shame campaigns for losing weight. This is madness. There's a reason the first thing your doctor does is make you step on a scale. Well, it used to be. There's a card now that you can give your doctor, and it says, please don't weigh me unless it's really medically necessary. It's always necessary. It's like asking your dentist not to look at your teeth.
Here's what this card says. Please don't weigh me unless it's, parentheses, really, unparentheses, close parentheses, medically necessary. If you really need my weight, please tell me why so I can give you my informed consent. This is given to doctors in offices now because people don't want people to know their weight.
There's a popular T-shirt that says, I don't owe no man a flat stomach. Okay, no one said you did. You do you. But you're not a freedom fighter because you want to keep eating donuts. USA Today actually wrote the sentence, science hasn't yet figured out how to solve obesity. And Ted Kyle concurs, saying, we don't know how to blunt the rise in obesity because we don't know precisely what the factors are that are causing it. Yes, what could it be? What? Damn it, this is a hard one.
Now, I'm going to add in here, here's part of the problem. And it's not really addressed in there. This is just a segment on a comedy show. I think an important one, because maybe, you know, this stems the tide. Acceptance is great to any individual. I certainly love everybody. I don't really care what anybody looks like or anything. I'm all about loving one another. But encouraging them to be healthier is a positive thing. It's like a student in school. Encouraging them to learn and get better grades is better for their future, so we do encourage these things. We don't celebrate their failures in school. One of the more tricky things really about obesity is that there are things that are causing obesity that are not considered. It's not always just overeating and gluttony. It's eating the wrong things. It's not understanding how many of the chemicals in our foods promote obesity. It's not understanding the soy in food that raises estrogen levels in men and causes them to store fat. It's not understanding that diet sodas and the artificial sweeteners in these things actually promote weight gain. And so there is more information that needs to be fleshed out in this. Obviously, most people who are dramatically overweight can look at their pantry and look at their shopping cart and pretty easily, if they're honest with themselves, identify a lot of garbage that is making them overweight. But there are also things in that cart that they think are good for them. They actually think, oh, well, my low-fat snack wells, see, I'm eating low-fat, Mike, and I don't understand, I'm not losing weight. It's because these low-fat products are loaded with a bunch of preservatives and a bunch of extra carbs and sugars to make them palatable taste-wise because you've stripped them of any fat in the content because we bought into this low-fat fad. Lie. Let me put it that way. The low-fat lie. People look in their cart and say, yeah, but I'm drinking diet sodas and don't understand that these artificial sweeteners trick your brain. They actually make you crave carbs. I've talked about it endlessly, that can actually promote, these diet sodas actually promote and worsen diabetes. So it is a little bit more complicated than just the fact, hey, you need to put the fork down and quit eating so much. It is understanding exactly the mechanisms of nutrition. It's why I'm here for an hour a week doing this segment to point these things out to you. So I wanted to point that out. It's a little more nuanced than just abject gluttony. Nothing breaks my heart more than to see people who are trying to make the positive changes for themselves, but they've been duped by diet sodas. They've been duped by low-fat prescriptions. They've been duped by onto some medications that actually promote weight gain. They're eating things that are full of things that are endocrine disruptors that disrupt the hormones that can cause you to store fat. It's a complicated topic. It does take some. It takes some research. I'm going to let Bill Maher finish up real quick.
People say to me, oh, come on, Bill, people struggle with this. Of course they do. Everything's a struggle. Life's a struggle. But somehow 50 years ago, this country looked entirely different. You don't think it was a struggle for them? You think cake wasn't delicious in 1969?
Now, again, there's some merit to that, exactly what he's saying. The problem is the food in 1969 is not like the food we eat today. It's not full of these endocrine disruptors. We didn't have these diet sodas. Aspartame didn't come on the scene until 1981. Oh, it tried during the 1970s, but the FDA rejected it over and over again until some political moves were made to put the right people in the right areas, and suddenly aspartame was approved. At about 2 o'clock in the morning, they fired the FDA commissioner who was standing in the way of approving it, and some politicians, including Donald Rumsfeld, our former defense secretary under George W. Bush, under the Reagan administration, became chief of staff, and he actually called in the middle of the night and fired the FDA chief and put somebody in to approve aspartame for human consumption because Donald Rumsfeld came from G.D. Searle, the company that was going to be selling aspartame. So there is a little bit of difference there. between these previous generations and the generations now, you have to understand what you're consuming. It's not even always about consuming too much. We know we do. You know, a six-pack of Mountain Dew and a bag of Funyuns, it ain't doing you any favors weight-wise. But you have to also understand that switching to a diet Mountain Dew and a low-fat snack well is not going to help you. That's not what you need. You need real nutrition, and you need to get these chemicals and endocrine disruptors out of your diet.
And that's the saddest part. We can do this, I think. But by lying about it and making excuses, psychologically, it's telling ourselves that letting ourselves go is the best we can do. And I got to believe that as Americans, we can still do better than that.
So I think it's important that he brings this up. We should set a new standard for ourselves. You can look, obesity is an epidemic in this country. It costs a lot of people a lot of misery. And if I can add just a tiny bit more tough love, and I mean love, because our children deserve the best that they can get. We owe them, give them the best futures they have. If you've got a child who is significantly overweight, it's your job to make that not happen. Love your child, but you're setting your child up for all kinds of adversity. You're putting extra obstacles in their way, not only health-wise, but socially. You know, you're raising their risk of all kinds of different diseases, all the way from cancer to heart disease later on in life. It's not easy. I didn't get a hold of my kids till they were four, but I did it. I made the substitutions that I needed to make. My children are now 21 years old, and as far as I know, I haven't had this conversation with them in six. I don't think either one of them has ever had a whole soda. They've tasted it. They don't like it because I did not allow their taste buds to get accustomed to it while they were kids. If nothing else I did as a parent was worth anything, making sure that my kids were not addicted to sodas may be my one victory. You can set your kids' taste buds. It's not easy. And the later you wait to start, if you wait until they're an obese teenager to try to make these changes, you got a fight on your hands. But you kind of made that happen. It is time to have that battle with your children. Explain to them once they get older exactly why you're doing it. But if you've got young children, if you're expecting, don't let them set their taste buds to always need high amounts of sugar. I gave my kids treats. I didn't hover over my kids when they were at a birthday party, not let them eat a piece of cake. But when they came home, the 90% of their diet that I was responsible for, there was some good food in that diet. And my kids grew up very happy. I had no behavior problems. We had no weight problems. They were almost never sick. They were allowed to grow as nature intended them to. They didn't have a whole bunch of hormones and antibiotics in their food. You owe your kids that. So while we all need to accept responsibility for ourselves, understand that we should be aspiring to do better, nothing wrong with anybody who's overweight. I'm not mad at anybody. I'm actually very sympathetic because I understand the system has been stacked against you. Even those products promoted as for healthy weight are actually making you fatter and sicker. It is the worst thing I've seen. I've talked about it so many times, how sad I think that is when I see people trying to do the right thing, but they've been duped by marketing and a medical establishment that just doesn't even pay attention to food and food additives and chemicals and these kinds of things. But when it comes to our children, you have a responsibility to allow a child to be raised in a healthy way, set them up for success, and obesity is a big black mark against kids across the board. Just the social side of it alone, you're stripping them of some of the joy of growing up. You risk their alienation in some cases. Kids can be cruel. Don't send your kids into crowds with something that kids might be mean to them about. Just that alone is enough to do it. But parents need to accept not only responsibility for themselves and try to aspire to do better, but we should really be trying to do a lot better by our kids. Be right back. Can I get your hand to ride on? Just a piece of lip to bite on. What a night to fly my kite on. Do you want to flash a light on? Take a look. It's on display for you. Coming down. When it comes to our children's health, too, there's a meme that's out there that's pretty funny. It's a picture of John Hamm. What was that advertising show he was on? It's like the 50s or so. Mad Men, wasn't that it? Mad Men, a big hit series. I don't think I ever watched it, but It's John Hamm. He was an advertising executive in Mad Men. So it's a picture of him presenting to a room, and it says, Big Pharma's first Adderall meeting. And the sign behind him says, Meth, but for children. funny meme, not a funny situation because it's absolutely true. I wanted to announce something here, give somebody a little plug. Dr. Joseph Mercola probably made more impact on my health learning the material that he put out. He's a natural health doc. And he had just a wealth of information. He came under a great deal of attack during COVID. Now, it turns out basically everything he said from the beginning of COVID, everything from vitamin D to obesity to calling into question the shots, any of these things, he was labeled, I think, by the Biden White House or whatever group of totalitarians took over healthcare to be number one on the misinformation dozen. I believe he was subpoenaed and maybe had to testify. And maybe he was definitely was under a great deal of attack. And for some reason, he started taking down his stories on his. He's got Mercola.com, which I've used as a reference in my personal life for 17 years now and have used it on the show quite regularly. But his stories started disappearing after 72 hours. I got to be honest with you. I felt that was weird and maybe a little bit of an overreaction. Like he would put out this great health information. None of it's controversial. If you read his articles, they're very long. I've never read a whole Mercola article because it goes into study after study after study, all documented stuff geared towards natural health. But he takes his stuff down. Well, he has now reintroduced his entire library. I think it's like 15,000 topics. And so you can search this database. He is on Substack where freedoms, free speech is last stand appears to be on Substack. Now, I do believe this is a subscription service with him, so maybe he's just crazy like a fox. I hate it when people look at natural health people and say, oh, they're just trying to make money off of that. What? Somebody who shares information with you that can radically change your life and gives you good supplement products or good food products, they're not allowed to make a profit, but we sit by while Big Pharma just Scrooge McDucks their way to piles and piles, trillions of dollars of money. You know, natural health people, I like that guy, but he's always trying to sell something. Yeah, he believes in these products. He believes in these supplements. He believes in these foods. Yeah, he's trying to sell you the foods. Don't hold somebody accountable because they're trying to make a living providing good products to somebody. It's not a reason to dismiss people. But Mercola has now got, I believe it's a $5 a month subscription on Substack. His Substack is takecontrol.substack.com. And I just say this because you can't find his articles online for free like I have for 17 years. Now, I hope he makes a lot of money on this because I cannot tell you the benefit that Dr. Mercola was to me for free for 17 years. I have no problems whatsoever in paying him $60 a year to arm myself with good health advice. As I said, it is documented. It is sciencey. I'm a health nerd. I love that stuff. But he's also plain spoken. You will understand from even his little, he does a summary of every article that will let you know if you're on the right track. So if you're suffering from health conditions, I've told you to do internet searches for natural treatment for IBS, natural treatment for whatever. And you'll find a lot of good resources. Now, the way that Google is, if you do it on the G word, the first 35 responses are going to be from the CDC and from pharmaceutical companies. Just be prepared. You got to dig. But Mercola's got some great stuff. Again, that's takecontrol.substack.com. I have no affiliate link. I'm not making any money off of this. I'm just telling you, the guy has done fantastic work. He should be rewarded for it. People should support him financially, and you will find things in there that are a great benefit to your health. So Dr. Mercola is now on Substack. All of his library is searchable on that Substack link. If you've got health issues that you want to address naturally, that is one of the best resources that I can give you. I'll be right back. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, doing Hump Day Health, Natural Health News You Can Use. I've been having sleep problems. I am actually somebody prone to have sleep problems. I've got monkey mind, to be sure. My mind can race at night. I went through periods before I changed my diet, got a lot of the chemicals and garbage out of my diet. I went through bouts sometimes of 6 months of maybe getting 2 to 3 hours of sleep a night, restless sleep on the couch with the TV on. I just couldn't sleep. And I got to tell you, it is life-wrecking. I couldn't focus. I was irritable. I was grumpy. My poor children. It was terrible. So I've always kind of struggled with sleep. When I changed my diet, that just went away. And, of course, I'd been put on the pills. Some of them were, I mean, I always had friends going, oh, here's what I take. And I would try this. It'd make me feel bad the next day or make me feel weird or whatever. When I changed my diet, it just went away. It's like, oh, my gosh, I sleep now, too. Lately, in the past few months, probably, kind of snuck up on me. You know, occasionally, everybody has a bad night's sleep. But they were starting to stack up to where I was noticing it. And the thing about me, when you realize that the power of your health is in your hands, you don't think to yourself, man, I'm not sleeping good. I got to go see a doctor. I got to get a prescription for something. I'm not sleeping good. My immediate thing is to say, what am I doing that is screwing up my sleep? And I start looking to identify things. One thing I know is a problem is that I am on screens late at night. And there are glasses, blue blocking glasses that I'm trying for that kind of thing because I don't really have a choice. Sometimes I work till late at night. I may not get home till 10, 10:30 at night, and then I got to put a show together. And so I've got to get online and do these things, so I'm going to get some of these blue blocker glasses, but I've been trying to minimize my screen time. But I also was starting to wonder if my eating habits, when I ate, was hurting me as well. So I wanted to get into this one study here. So this is really more about losing weight than sleep. I'm going to get to the sleep component in a second. But a study has suggested the best but unusual time to eat dinner to lose weight. If you're struggling to shift the pounds, it may be worth looking over your meal times. Research found that people who followed a strict mealtime plan lost 5 pounds more compared with other participants over 14 weeks. They also experienced a reduction in blood pressure and were more likely to have improved mood. However, there's a catch. The participants ate their dinner before 3 p.m. A study by University of Alabama at Birmingham was investigating time-restricted eating, which also goes by the name of intermittent fasting. So they go into that. But what they found was the people who had the greatest success with losing weight with intermittent fasting had a food window within 8 hours a day, 16 hours fasted. This is kind of accepted in intermittent fasting. But instead of maybe doing that from 2 to 10 where you eat, maybe eat an afternoon snack and then a big meal and then you stop eating by 10 o'clock, they moved it all forward and people ate at 3. The reason I bring this up, this study kind of jogs, here's what I'd been doing that I was suspecting was interfering with my sleep. It takes a lot of energy from your body to digest food. There are stimulating things in food. It's not best, and a lot of people know it's not great to eat right before you go to bed. Unfortunately for me, because my schedule was so crazy, sometimes I couldn't eat dinner until 10 o'clock at night. And I was eating because I don't eat much during the day. I don't ever have breakfast. I have my full-fat coffee. A lot of days I don't have any lunch. Doesn't bother me at all with that full-fat coffee. But then I was stretching it out so bad that I was eating my dinner at 10 o'clock at night and then trying to go to bed an hour, hour and a half later. It wasn't working. So I started wondering if eating that late was really the thing that was disrupting my sleep. And I found this video. It's a guy named Thomas DeLauer. I've played some clips from him before. He's got some great stuff on intermittent fasting and keto and things like that on YouTube. But he had a guy on. The guy's name is Mike Muzel, M-U-T-Z-E-L. He has high intensity health. And I ran across this segment about when your body is most ready to digest and process food, get the best nutrition from it. And it's really based around the idea of a circadian rhythm, which I think is very ignored in today's world. Because we can light up a room like it's the middle of the day at any time. Understand that for most of history of humans, pretty much when it got dark outside, it was time to go to bed. When it got light in the morning, it was time to get up. Now we're able to adjust those things with dark blinds and great lights and whatever we want. And I think we're screwing with our circadian rhythm. I am as guilty of it as anybody. But I thought this was interesting when it comes to eating, not only the best time to eat, to process your food, to digest your food, to get available nutrients out of your food, but also when it came to sleep.
This early time-restricted feeding for a lot of different reasons. And I think part of that, and it speaks to really, it dovetails, like you said, exactly into this part of the conversation. Our digestion functions optimally during certain times of the day. And so if we just pause that thought and think about what most people have been doing with regards to intermittent fasting for the better part of 7-8 years now, is most people have been fasting all day and bookending their day with a lot of volume of and a lot of calories, 2,000-3,000 calories, you know, eating that between, say, 6 p.m. and 11 p.m. Well, I don't need to tell you. I mean, we know this. Our digestion is not really from a neurologic intervention standpoint. Our gastrointestinal stomach acid, hydrochloric acid, pancreatic lipase, pepsin, bile, all of these different motility enzymes and so forth, they are peaking between 11 and about 4. So 11 a.m., 4 p.m. So if you're just having this massive meal right before you go to bed at the end of the day, now I'm sure if you're new to fasting, you're going to be really hungry. There might be a little bit more digestive sort of intervention going on there. But we need to understand that the body is a diurnal being, right? Everything is you know, testosterone rises and falls, cortisol rises and falls, and our digestive tract motility and function tends to peak around our gut clock peaks, you know, around 11 to 4. Now, it might pivot based upon when you go to bed and when you wake up, but it's really the middle part of the day. That actually happens to be when leptin is at its lowest level. Now, we know that leptin is like this energy sensing hormone. So when it goes low, that's going to signal your brain that you should refeed. So it all when you look at the hormones of digestion, absorption, of satiety, they all suggest that we should be eating earlier in the day and not fasting all day. And so that's why I'm a big fan of the early time-restricted feeding aspect. Now, the challenge with this is for some people, once they start feeding, like let's say they have their first meal at 10, 30, 11 or 10, right? For them, it's hard to put a stop to that. Like it's like, okay, so if you're going to get an 18 or 20 hour fast and you start at 10 and you end at say 2 or 4, how are you going to navigate the rest of your day without food? And so I think that's the hiccup for some people in creating more strict habits around that, like, you know, social, having earlier dinners with family, making sure that food is hard to access and there's not like chips sitting around your counter and things like that, because that can derail some of this. But again, going back to why should we even consider early time-restricted feeding compared to intermittent fasting? And it has to do with optimally digesting the food based upon the circadian rhythm influence of digestion and motility, which happens to peak sort of middle of the day. So that's why I'm a fan of it. And what's great about early time-restricted feeding, according to several studies that were published, you know, in June of 2019 and subsequent studies, eating just, you don't have to fast as much. So just like a 16-8 early time-restricted feeding window was associated with increases in favorable metabolic processes like autophagy, decreases in mTOR, improvements in various enzymes that are linked with more graceful aging and reduced chronic inflammatory responses. So again, I think it's it's a thing that we should be considering. And it helps to, and I think, Thomas, this is the biggest aspect of time-restricted feeding. It can help support sleep. So we all know that, you know, we can have a poor night's sleep by going out with our friends and staying out late and then hitting up pizza. We've probably all done this in college and we didn't sleep well. We woke up feeling hungover. But when you entrain your peripheral circadian clock system, it helps with the central circadian clock system that's so intimately connected to sleep quality and sleep duration. So when you get your feeding windows in rhythm and you're real consistent with that, you just reinforce the cogs of the circadian clock wheel. And so you just create momentum in this flywheel that's harder to derail. And, you know, I know that we've all experienced sleep issues in the past, especially peri and postmenopausal women are the group of individuals that tend to suffer most severely, I would say, and consistently with sleep issues. So they are the subgroup of the population that stands to benefit, in my opinion, the most from early time restricted feeding, again, just because it can help foster a deep and more restful sleep.
Now, this tells me that there's a very real possibility I may be a postmenopausal woman, but you know, that spoke to me. So, look, I'm a health nerd. I'm fascinated by all the mechanisms that he just mentioned. It gets to be kind of a word salad, particularly if you're just listening on the radio. Essentially, what he's saying is our body is designed ultimately to most efficiently process food earlier in the day rather than late. I have been doing it different. I fast until through lunch, usually. I would go to the gym most days. work out during the day and then eat in the afternoon and then the evening. I'm going to have to adjust probably my workout time to earlier in the morning and hopefully try to take my meals much, much, much earlier in the day. And if I get an opportunity to go out with a bunch of people on a Friday night at 9 o'clock and have a big meal, I'm not missing that. That's fine. I can make that adjustment, but I'm going to try this. I did it yesterday. I consciously made the effort yesterday to eat a bigger lunch, a good lunch, and then I had a little snack probably around 6:30, 7 o'clock, a little bit of protein and a yogurt for dessert, but it wasn't much eating then. I got in bed around 10 o'clock. I think by 10:30 I was completely out. Ultimately, I was awakened by a text at 5 o'clock in the morning. Don't text people at 5 o'clock in the morning. But I got the first good night's sleep I've had in quite a while. So, again, these things, you have to do a little bit of research. You have to figure out if you're having problems with sleep with any of these things. It's a bit of a, it's like being a detective, trying to figure out what you're doing. I think the blue light from computers, and I think probably the way I was eating, particularly very late at night, was affecting my sleep. So I'm going to make the adjustments. I'm not going to an Ambien. I'm not going to continue to do something that's not good for my body and then mask it with some kind of a sleep aid. I'm going to try to figure out if I can just do this naturally. I'll report back to you as I continue to make this change. I'll be right back. Citizens from all over the world. This is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees. So will you catch me now? I'm falling. All right, last few minutes of the segment. I really don't know if I've got enough time to do this justice. I may bring the topic back, but I ran across this story about young men taking Viagra. This is not normal. I know we live in a pill for every ill society, but we should be looking at why we're suffering this ill in the first place. Why are young, robust, virile men suddenly needing in their early years Viagra? There was a story here. After the breakup of a five-year relationship, James was nervous about dating again. He was 27, healthy, and had a good sex life. But when it came to sleeping with new people, he was experiencing, quote, performance anxiety. He said, I was really struggling to get it up. He goes on to say, now in his 30s, James still takes Viagra regularly. He didn't go to his general practitioner. Instead, he just started using Viagra. Now in his 30s, James still takes Viagra regularly. He never told his partner what he had done. At this point, he's not alone. He estimates that as many as half of his male friends have told him they take Viagra, and he suspects that even more do so in secret. Figures released to The Independent by pharmaceutical company Viatris show that between May 2020 and May 2021, Viagra Connect sold more than 7 million tablets in the U.K. More than 60% of U.K. users are between ages 25 and 54 years old. So this is obviously a trend. And I have done a lot of segments on my show that deal with things that are affecting testosterone in men. But to just finish this segment up here, I guess I've got enough time to get to my list here. And you can always email me, MikeMadison@WYAB.com, and get my show notes if you're interested. But you can also look this up. This article is from Eat This, Not That. It's at eatthis.com. The headline of the story is The 13 Worst Foods for Your Erection. So, look, as I said, this is a medical show. I play a doctor on the radio. I am not a doctor. Let me make sure everybody understands that. I am not a doctor or scientist in any way. But, you know, health stuff. I've talked about irritable bowel syndrome. I think I can tackle this subject as well. What this story goes into is it lists, we're going to go through some of the top 10 things that are damaging male testosterone, and these things are causing people to have these performance issues. And the number one on here, I've talked about it, I don't know how many times here on the show, is soy. They say if date night regularly includes sushi, order your appetizer wisely and consider edamame as one of the less favorable foods for your performance. A study published in Cancer Epidemiology, Biomarkers, and Prevention found that just 2 scoops of pure soy protein powder a day decreased men's testosterone levels by 19% after 4 weeks. Now, what I will tell you about that, this is not just about sushi and about edamame. It's been just a couple of weeks ago, I told you. You go to your pantry, any of the processed foods you've got in there, you go look, and there's going to be soy in every single one of them. Soy is in everything, and men are gobbling it up by the scoop every single day, and then not understanding why they can't perform. Look for this soy. It's an estrogen mimicker. It lowers your testosterone levels. You're not suffering from a lack of the little blue pill. You're suffering from too much soy exposure and lower testosterone. Number two, white bread and processed carbs. According to a University of Buffalo study printed in the journal Diabetes Care, 40% of non-diabetic obese participants had lower than normal testosterone ratings. If you are overweight, you have reduced testosterone. And this may be why you are seeking the little blue pill. Number three was too much booze. Now, I found that very helpful back in college, but number four was grass-fed beef. Whenever you're adding the protein-rich benefits of red meat to your diet, always choose grass-fed beef. The typical farmed variety is also often fed artificial hormones and antibiotics, which can cause a disruption in testosterone levels. That's why here at the Mike Madison Show, we recommend to you Stonington Farms. That's stoningtonfarm.com. Their cattle is Mississippi-raised without any hormones, no antibiotics. It is cattle-raised the way it should be, great tasting, and you buy in bulk, you save money. Bottled water was another one. This gets into what we talked about pretty extensively a couple weeks ago, is the endocrine disruptors and all these plastics that we're using. Canned soup. Listen to this statistics. Canned soups and meals are notoriously high in dietary sodium. A can of SpaghettiOs has 1,780 milligrams, as much as 10 bags of Doritos in terms of sodium. It can lead to elevated blood pressure and diminished blood flow to certain parts of the body. Flavored soda goes into high fructose corn syrup. A farmed fish, as opposed, like farmed salmon. You need to get wild-caught salmon. It also lists microwave popcorn and all the chemicals that are associated with that. There's a whole bunch of foods that's affecting your testosterone. Before you reach for the little blue pill and line Big Pharma's coffers anymore, take a look at what you're eating for erectile dysfunction. Got to go. See you later. Bye-bye.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try.